conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, two school districts are meeting with members of their communities to address the growing opioid epidemic. One meeting being held at High Point High School from 6 to 8 in Prince George's County, where there have been more than 30 overdoses this school year, including one today. The other, a work session being held by the Arlington County School Board. That meeting comes 1 week after a Wakefield High School 14-year-old died from an overdose. School systems are sounding the alarm and trying to address the crisis. And tonight, we talk about what parents need to know. My guests are Dr. Siva Kaliamurthy, attending psychiatrist at the Addiction Clinic at Children's National Hospital and assistant professor of psychiatry at Howard University. Also joining us, clinical psychologist Dr. Ashley Elliott. We're talking about this extremely important and very distressing issue. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Kaliamurthy and Dr. Elliott, thank you both for joining this important conversation.
Thanks for having us.
Sure. Dr. Elliott, let me start with you and ask the question that all parents are probably asking their children right now. Why is this happening? If a child has survived an overdose, why are you doing this? You interact with children, Dr. Elliott. What's the answer?
Well, Harold, there are various answers to this question. I've been dealing with juvenile and adolescent opioid crisis since about 2013, 2014, actually. And you see that there are kids who want to find some method of escape via drug use that is easier for them to obtain. I had a lot of clients who had parents that were older or may have had some medical conditions or at end of life. And those stressors have pushed them to want to dabble in substance abuse. And they are leaning towards, unfortunately, a lot of over-the-counter narcotics because at their age, they're not really sure where to purchase some of these illicit narcotics on the street. And then also, in the last couple of years, we've seen mainstream popularity in TV shows and artists, celebrities, openly talking about narcotic use when it comes to like Percocets and codeine. And a lot of kids feel like, well, okay, that's something that I could easily get. That's something that I can get without asking my parents for money for. This is easily attainable. I can use this. They're chasing a high, as with most people who are going on a substance abuse journey. That journey is because we're trying to fill a void, we're trying to escape a reality, or we're trying to seek an elevated state for some reason.
Mm. Dr. Kaliamurthy, on one hand, as Dr. Elliott said, they're trying to find an escape. Back in the old days, the big escape was marijuana. And certainly the biggest danger of that was marijuana that could very well have been laced with PCP. But we're talking about something now that could literally kill you in less than 30 minutes. Aren't young people getting the message of how deadly this is?
Thanks for the question, Mr. Fisher. So they have started to get the message. So what we are seeing right now is, you know, a consequence of exposure to these pills over the past couple of years. The patients that I treat, I have a clinic here in D.C., and I help a lot of kids struggling with opioid use, particularly the fake M30 or Percocet pills. And they did not start yesterday or in the last month. They've been using for the last year or the last 6 months, and they've had overdoses. They've known friends who have had non-fatal overdoses and fatal overdoses. So the awareness has definitely increased, but it's unclear when we are going to see the consequences of that increased awareness. Maybe we'll see a decline a couple of months from now, but the awareness is definitely increasing around the dangers of fentanyl.
Talk to me about that growth, Dr. Elliott. We began to talk about the opioid crisis as a whole pre-COVID pandemic, and this initially was something that we were seeing in some of the outer suburbs and in some places in the inner cities, but this was an adult issue. Why do you believe that this is now growing amongst children?
I think the fallacy is that the opioid crisis started a few years ago. We've been in an opioid crisis for decades.
Yeah.
And when we talk about children, I remember being in high school and being well aware of my peers who were using, then it was the 4, so Tylenol 3, Tylenol 4, because one, again, ease of access, and also feeling like it was a cool high, which is something that I have talked about with some of the children and adolescents and even young adults, is this high is something that I know, you know, it's not like crack cocaine, it's not like meth, it's not like this or that, and I can taper it. And also I know that I can replenish, I can get more through, you know, a perk. When we talk about Percocets and we talk about like codeine, we talk about these things, these are prescriptions. So you're able to get these tablets at 30, 60, depending on the household. Sometimes I'm seeing people come home with like 90-day supplies, especially if y'all have, their parents are dealing with chronic conditions or cancer patients for their pain. And they feel like this is the easiest way to go about it, this cost-effective. And also because their parents or their caregivers or people in their community have so much of them, which is another situation about overprescribing prescription medication, have so much, they feel like this is a way to not get caught, they won't know, rather than having to steal money, having to ask around the neighborhood and the information get back to their family, to their caregivers. What they don't understand is when we talk about opioid, the opioid addiction is one of the most intense and unforgiving addictions when we talk about physiological somatic response, the bodily response. And at these young ages, they're not prepared for that.
Yeah, and to your point, you're correct. I mean, we could, opioid addiction goes back not just decades, but, more than 100 years. I was specifically speaking about the fentanyl issue. And to that point, Dr. Callie Murthy, explain to us how fentanyl works on the body. We've heard reports when police officers are making drug busts that they have to wear gloves because they don't have to ingest it. It can be deadly even when it comes in contact with the skin.
Thanks for that question, and I wanted to address that because there is a lot of misinformation about what fentanyl is and what it can and cannot do. So fentanyl was found for pharmaceutical purposes in the 1960s, and it has been, we still use it in the hospital to this day, even in pediatrics for sedation purposes in the ICU settings, and even in labor and delivery, a lot of women who give birth and they choose to have epidurals, they get fentanyl. So we know a lot about fentanyl's pharmacological properties. What we are seeing right now is illicitly manufactured fentanyl. And it's not just fentanyl, but there's a bunch of substances clamped together called high-potency synthetic opioids. So it's different kinds of fentanyl analogs, which are structurally similar to the ones we use in the hospital. So what we do know about fentanyl is that it cannot be easily absorbed if you ingest it. If you take it by mouth, A lot of what goes into the body, it gets metabolized by the liver and it's chucked out of your system. So most people who do, like almost everyone that I treat who uses fentanyl, they know that they have to crush the pill and snort it intranasally or they have to smoke it. We do have fentanyl patches, which are specifically formulated in the hospital to treat pain. And otherwise, it has to be administered intravenously, IV. So when we hear about news stories about law enforcement officers who come in contact with substances that may be fentanyl, oftentimes we are wondering what exactly it is that they're coming in contact with. Because on one hand, we hear scientists say that, well, that is not possible in terms of route of administration for this medication, that they can be exposed so easily and it can be absorbed by skin. But police officers often claim that the products that they are dealing with is not the end product pills that are being sold, but you know, more potent, concentrated products. So they may be having a different kinds of reaction. But the purpose I'm bringing this up is because if you, you know, if there's someone you know who is using fentanyl pills and they are, you know, they need CPR, they've overdosed or something, we shouldn't shy away from performing CPR because of fears that that fentanyl that they had consumed is going to somehow enter into our system.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about fentanyl as part of the broader opioid crisis and what is happening with our children. Why are they doing it? If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You know, Dr. Elliott, is this as difficult a habit to kick when compared to, let's say, heroin or any other kind of drug?
Oh, opioid withdrawal and opioid detoxification is very difficult. Alcohol and opioid detox is one of the worst detoxes I have seen when it comes to clients. And we're talking about a youth, an adolescent, a child. That body, it can really ravage you. And a lot of people, that's why addicts are addicts, because yes, I'm chasing a high, but also the side effects of withdrawal are very damning. So you have intense nausea, intense diarrhea, sickness, lots of nasal discharge from running. You can have chills, fevers. You can have intense body aches where you feel like you can't do anything. And also, if it's not watched, it's not treated, I've also seen people who haven't had their withdrawal treated that have passed away because of cardiac arrest and other things of that nature. And children really don't have the judgment call. They don't have that executive functioning to understand what they're doing. And this was kind of like, you know, a few years ago when we saw the K2 crisis.
Right.
And everybody was, you know, it was K2. And I would see, at that time, I was in a psychiatric unit, and a lot of the young people didn't understand that you could have a substance-induced psychosis because of their use. And they're not understanding that there are other side effects when it comes to heavy opioid use and how that ravages your body, especially depending on your method of use. And fentanyl, I've also seen, is this very curious notion of, I want to see if it's really as bad as, you know, the adult people are saying it is. It's a very childlike curiosity, but it's a dangerous curiosity, you know. And we don't, and I feel like because we have kind of pivoted in our community from talking about fentanyl for a while because it was a suburban thing, that a lot of kids in these urban areas, they weren't getting the same messages that there were in more gated communities, in more upper class communities, as opposed to, you know, areas of like PG County, DC, or areas where there are more ethnically diverse communities in Northern Virginia.
Well, certainly it is everywhere now. As we know, last month, Montgomery County had a huge meeting about it. Again, as we mentioned at the beginning of this program, there's a meeting right now at High Point High School. There is a meeting with, there's a work work group meeting with the Arlington County School Board. It is everywhere. It is permeated every part of our community. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about opioids, specifically fentanyl, and the youth crisis regarding these illicit drugs. We have Perry on the line calling from Silver Spring. Perry, I'm going to talk to you in just a moment. Please do not hang up. Stay with us. We want to remind you that you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. If you're on the phone, Perry, stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about the youth opioid crisis. My guests are Dr. Siva Kaliamurthy. He is the attending psychiatrist at the Addiction Clinic at Children's National Hospital and assistant professor of psychiatry at Howard University, and clinical psychologist Dr. Ashley Elliott. Let me go to the phone lines at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Perry, calling from Silver Spring. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening to you and your guests. Thank you for this topic. I was just talking to my son, 17-year-old son now. So I'm sorry, I'm a little emotional about this.
That's okay.
I know he's fine. I'm just saying he's fine, but I know the things that are waiting for him. I came out of high school 30 years ago, and I remember codeine was used frequently. People would just drink cough syrup and stuff. So I was asking, can you define what are opiates? Is it one drug, or is it multiple types of drugs? Because I've heard about codeine, Percocets, fentanyl. So is it a family of drugs, or is it something specific? Because that's all my own confusion about it.
Dr. Kaliamurthy, can you take that question, please?
Yes, I can. Thanks for that question. So opioids is an umbrella term that we use to describe a wide variety of medication. And historically, we produced opium. It's like a plant that we obtained opium from, and used that for pain control. And there's a history of using it for recreational purposes that goes back centuries. More recently in modern medicine, we are able to synthetically manufacture it in labs. That's how we came about heroin and oxycodone, morphine, methadone, and now fentanyl. So they belong to a class of synthetic opioids that mimic the properties of the opium plant. The difference is that the synthetic opioids, they're engineered to be more potent when consumed. And most of them are developed for medicinal purposes, but we unfortunately found ways to use them recreationally to all the negative consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Perry. And I appreciate your parental love, and just keep an eye on your son and make sure that he stays away from this stuff. Thank you so much for your phone call. Perry's question brings me to this question, Dr. Elliott. What can parents do? What should they look for? Because fentanyl is not like weed. It's not like, crack, for example. You can't necessarily smell it. Obviously, we've seen enough in mass media about the about what the pills look like. But what should parents be keeping an eye out for?
Definitely. And this hits me because I come from a family that had dealt with heavy opioid addiction. So this hits me twofold. And I'm sorry, Perry's emotion got to me. So you definitely want to look for a change in mood, irritation, heavy irritation, really frustrated, snappiness. You want to look for those times where if you know your child's energy load, like if they're a bubbly person, if they're a morning person, how much energy they normally have. If you find them kind of moving slow, being really lethargic without cause, it's not related to things that are going on at school, things that are going on in life. If you notice, one thing that I notice about, we talk about identifying a high when I'm in group with kids or in group with young adults, we call it in the streets, we call it nodding.
Right.
You know, where you see a person kind of look like they're going to sleep, but they can be standing in the up. They can be leaning against something and not really aware, especially when you talk about, like, heavy opioid use. You will see that if there's some withdrawal effect, like early withdrawal, you may see, like, I don't know, it's the time we talk about COVID and RSV and everything, but, like, a lot of sniffing and nose are running. They're also pay attention to any gastrointestinal complaints with all of these symptoms. Don't just look for one. It's a cluster because, you know, we don't want to. And also ask your children about these drugs. You got to have conversations about people that they're around, things that they have been interested into, things that they have been introduced to, and if they understand the gravity of how these drugs can impact them behaviorally, mentally, emotionally, socially. But a lot of it is paying attention to mood switches, paying attention to communication switches, and paying attention to anything somatically, physically, as a parent, as a caregiver, that you feel like this isn't normal for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts about that, Dr. Kaliamurthy?
So, Dr. Elliott raises excellent points. I just wanted to add on a few more based on what parents have been telling me in the DMV. So the root of administration of these pills seems to be smoking. Most of my patients seem to prefer smoking these pills versus crushing it up and snorting. And the way they smoke it is they place it on a piece of aluminum foil, kind of like Reynolds, tin foil, like Reynolds foil, and they heat it up with a lighter and inhale the smoke. And parents often tell me they started finding like crumpled up aluminum foils around the house. And when the kids burn it, it produces a burnt plastic smell. And that's something that parents often notice first, like, why is there a burnt plastic smell around the house? And that could be telltale signs that a kid could be using these fentanyl pills.
Back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's talk to Tuahita, calling from Lorton, Virginia. Tuahita, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you for having me on. I had to chime in on this very important topic. It's very personal to me. I lost my oldest son, Tajir Williams, to a fentanyl overdose October 7, 2019, the day after his 21st birthday. Since the death of my son, I started a nonprofit, Mobile Moms, where I work with mothers. I also started a podcast where we just recently did a podcast last week on fentanyl and the dangers of fentanyl. So I just wanted to kind of chime in for residents in the Fairfax County area. I'm not sure if you guys have already provided this resource.
No, please go right ahead and share what you'd like. Also, our condolences on the loss of your son, but please go right ahead.
Thank you. Fairfax County offers a program called Revive. It's an online free Narcan training. They also will not only just an online course, but they also will send you testing strips. So I know that I've just recently heard of the fentanyl testing strips where you can actually test the pills to see if they're laced, you know, if it's someone in the home that's an active user. And I have just really been kind of advocating that if you have a child and you think that they may be dabbling in pills, definitely get the Narcan training. It is free, and definitely get the testing strips through Fairfax County because they're free as well.
I see. Tuahitha, thank you so much for sharing that important information with us. I appreciate your phone call. Let me ask Dr. Kaliamurthy, what is, first of all, Narcan? How does it work to counteract the effects of fentanyl? We know that last month there was an overdose in Montgomery County where a student had Narcan applied, and that student's life was saved because of Narcan. How does Narcan work?
So Narcan, it's a brand name. The drug in it is called naloxone. It's the only opioid reversal agent that we have currently available. So what it essentially does is, once administered, the most common form it comes in is a nasal spray. It enters our bloodstream, and it goes to the places where other opioids act and attaches to the receptor and stops the opioid from working. So essentially, if someone's overdosing, this stops that overdose from happening by displacing the opioid in the body at the end of the day. So that's essentially how naloxone, the medication that brand name Narcan, works.
Mm. And the testing strips, I know that several school districts, including at High Point tonight, in addition to giving out Narcan, are also distributing testing strips. How do they work?
So the testing strips essentially test for the presence of fentanyl in any of the substances that someone may be using. And the way they work is, like, we need to dissolve bits of the sample in water, and then we just place the strip on top, and it'll pick up a positive or negative result based on whatever's in that sample.
Mm-hmm. Is there a chance that you could accidentally get a pill, a prescription that may have fentanyl in it that has been prescribed by your doctor? I know that, and this is why I ask. Last month, Montgomery County Police Chief Marcus Jones said that a lot of young people, teenagers, assume that they are getting Percocet and don't realize that these pills are laced with fentanyl because they don't know where they're coming from, because they're coming from the street. But I'm assuming it is highly unlikely that any prescribed opioid that you would get from your doctor would by chance have fentanyl in it, Dr. Kaliamurthy.
That's extremely unlikely given the safeguards we have in place. Because when a physician prescribes, or any healthcare provider who can prescribe is prescribing medications and opioids, it has to be obtained from the pharmacy, and the pharmacy usually gets it delivered from pharmaceutical companies and drug manufacturers. So it's highly unlikely that they are going to be mixing fentanyl with pills.
Mm-hmm.
That is prescribed and dispensed through pharmacies.
Dr. Elliott, as I mentioned again, school districts across our region and indeed across the nation are appearing to try to play catch up in dealing with this. Do you believe that they are doing the right thing? Are they just so far behind? What's your opinion about what school systems can do?
I do believe that we are far behind because sometimes we don't think about how our youth and young adults are still members of our community and our environment. And therefore, they are prone to the dangers that we adults are because they're humans in the society as well. I think that a lot of the programs that we used to use before weren't really effective because they were really treating kids as if it's very, they really minimize, you know, the intelligence of kids. Like when I think about like the DARE program, and how that historically had to be revamped millions of times. Well, not millions, a lot of times, but still wasn't effective. We have to have real conversations about, of course, I'm always going to talk about like mental health. We have to talk about community resources and why these children are reaching out for these drugs of escape or these drugs of enhancement. And also not being afraid to also bring people. I found that when I work with groups, seeing kids that are in recovery and having them be a part of these meetings and these groups has been transformative in some of these youth lives. Because it's not just an adult talking to them. It's a peer that is telling them, yeah, I had to go to detox. I had to be an inpatient for 28 days. I've lost sight. I've lost smell. There's no cartilage in my nose. You know, I have burns in my esophagus because I'm trying to smoke something through a pin-made pipe. You know, all of these things that they can't just be oogie boogie scary things. They have to be, this is real. And having conversations where we're asking questions and also listening to the harsh realities that some of these youth are going through. And I'm speaking of, we're talking about Narcan. George Washington University has a great program and a harm reduction program where the people can get free Narcan training. I'm someone who always has Narcan on them. I've had Narcan training. So if there's a youth or an adult that needs that help in the case of an OD, that's offered. And they don't care about age. They care about prevention. They care about help. They care about being able to save a life. So if anybody in the D.C. metro area would like to use that, that is a strong resource.
Tell us again, right before I go to another break, because I know we've got to let you go, but where is that resource to obtain Narcan?
So you can actually get Narcan from George Washington University has mobile units that go through different wards. Particularly, I know they come through Ward 7 and 8 because that's where a lot of these calls have been happening. So they have a mobile unit through their harm reduction program, and they will give you Narcan. And they also help youth and adults help get care for their opioid-related struggles. So they can help with meetings, and there's also, I work with a lot of people who are in methadone maintenance as they're detoxing from things such as various opioids. So George Washington University, you can go to the hospital and actually go to the emergency room. And there are some police stations here in D.C. too that if you ask an officer about a Narcan and Narcan training, they will provide you with resources. I know specifically in Ward 7 and Ward 8, that is a thing.
I want to thank you, Dr. Ashley Elliott, for sharing with us your expertise and your passion in this really critical conversation. I thank you again. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, more on this issue of opioids and children. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about the youth opioid crisis. Dr. Kelly Amurthy, I have a question about Narcan. Last week, I found a box, a small rectangular box of Narcan in my linen closet. And I remember putting it there because it was distributed to members of the media during a press conference probably about, 4 years ago. And I was cleaning out the linen closet and I said, oh, wow, I remember receiving this. And so I put it in the kitchen where I could have access to it in the event that someone needed it. I live alone, so that's, and I'm not, you know, opioid addicted. But my question to you is that, is it still any good, number one? And number two, How does it work in the system? I know you said it is inhaled, but I guess first thing I need to know is there an expiration date?
Great. Those are great questions that I get often asked by parents, so I'm happy to answer that. So Narcan does have an expiration date. So the box that you did get should have an expiration date on it, and I know it's approximately about 4 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the box that you have may have expired. But it's good to check the expiration date on the box. Now, I'm glad you have it in your living room. What I often tell parents is that having Narcan at home is like having a fire extinguisher at home.
Mm.
You know, you hope to never need it, but in case there's a fire, you're super happy that you have it. So Narcan is very similar. So the way it works is each box of Narcan comes with two different packets in there, and it has two sprays. So what happens is if you suspect someone having an opioid overdose, some of the signs you will see is that, you know, they are slowly losing consciousness. Their pupils are pinpoint. If you look at their eyes, they're not responding. You know, they're breathing really slows down. And they have cold, clammy skin. So you can open up one of the packets. There's two points to it. Like the white part goes into one of the nostrils, and the red part is the part you press. And you administer Narcan, but it is important to call 911 at the same time. The reason for this is Narcan acts like for 20 to 30 minutes, while a lot of opioids that people are commonly misusing, they're longer acting. So you can actually reverse an opioid overdose, but then the Narcan leaves the system in like 20, 30 minutes, and the patient can overdose again. So it's really important to call 911 so that they can get the help they need. And, and you need to know about Good Samaritan laws. In D.C., we do follow Good Samaritan laws, which provide protection against charges of drug paraphernalia or drug possession for the person making the phone call to help someone who is overdosing.
Mm-hmm.
In the event that the person you administer Narcan to does not, get revived, you wait 3 to 4 minutes, and then you use the other package in there and the other nostril and administer Narcan again. Mm-hmm. And hopefully you get help by then from 911.
What if you give it to them and what they're suffering from, whatever this episode happens to be, is not an opioid episode? Can Narcan hurt them?
The chances of Narcan hurting someone is very, very low. More often than not, the benefits far outweigh the risks of administering Narcan, even if, the reason that you're finding them unconscious or low breathing is not due to an opioid. The benefits of administering Narcan is still sufficiently high enough compared to any risk that it may possess.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk a little bit about the long-term psychological effects on children? We've talked about the physical effects, the physical risks. Mm-hmm. From your platform, from your level of expertise, what do you believe are the long-term psychological effects of using fentanyl or any other opioid that has been problematic these days, even if that person does not lose their life?
So, there's two categories of people that I come across who have experienced overdose. The first category of kids are kids who have never used opioids before. They tried it once, and then they overdosed, and they revived. And they do not necessarily go on to have any long-term consequences from opioid use. The other category of kids are the kids who have developed what we call an opioid use disorder. That's the clinical term we use for addiction to opioids. Now, the challenge has been that the current generation of kids, the 15, 16, 17-year-olds who are using these drugs, they have the only opioid they've ever experienced is fentanyl. You know, historically, it used to be oxycodone, and then they would use heroin, and then the supply was contaminated with fentanyl. So most adults, fentanyl was not the first point of entry into opioid use. But for kids, unfortunately, especially in the last couple of years, fentanyl seems to be the point of entry. So we know that it is more potent. We know that we're going to see long-term consequences, and most of it is going to stem from having an addiction. An addiction of any kind is a chronic disease. People, you know, it's kind of like having diabetes. When you have diabetes, you're constantly working to keep your blood sugar under control. Similarly, when you have an addiction of any kind, specifically opioid use disorder, you need to put in the work to, you know, stay on track. And sometimes you may, you know, fall off track, you know, you may return to using, and I tell my kids that's okay, as long as they're trying to get back on track. And we can, you know, I try to help them get back to school, you know, work on their grades, work on their extracurricular activities. We take a very strength-based approach when we're helping these kids. And unfortunately, given how chronic it is, this is something that they need to really put in a lot of effort into for a long time.
Mm. You know, Dr. Kaliamurthy, we've covered so much in a brief amount of time, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to share some final thoughts regarding this opioid crisis, particularly as it relates to fentanyl that we perhaps have not covered. Indeed, you're the expert, not I.
So I think we still need to focus on prevention. Prevention is the best intervention that we have for our kids. We definitely need to work on preventing access to these pills. For whatever reason, they seem to have easy access to these pills in the community, at school, via social media. So we need to work on preventing access to these pills and also other prevention methods in schools and in communities. And I just wanted to add on to what Dr. Elliott mentioned about Narcan and where it's available. So apart from the George Washington University's initiative, the D.C. Department of Health actually supplies Narcan for free for residents of the district. You don't need an ID card or prescription to get this. So it's available in very specific places and pharmacies depending on the ward you live in. The site can, the locations can be accessed via their website. Or you can also text LiveLongDC to 888-811 and someone will reach out to you to figure out how to get you Narcan. In Maryland, Narcan is easy, you know, free from overdose prevention sites in all specific counties. But you can also go to fire stations and get Narcan for free from fire stations.
Hmm.
In Virginia, there's a standing order from the Surgeon General. You can get it from the pharmacy, but it is not free. There may be other locations where you can get it for free.
What's that text that you mentioned in the district?
It's Live Long DC. 888-811.
Dr. Siva Kaliamurthy, thank you so very much for your time and your expertise. I really appreciate the conversation. I also want to thank Dr. Ashley Elliott for participating earlier. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, February 7th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.